one of the late column for the Fighting Bills.
Base hit down the left field line. Greg scores.
Who is it? Rollins has won it. They stream out of the dugout. Yeah. Rollins ball near third. This game is over.
Second deck walk off home run. Grand slam, Bryce Harper.
That's what I call hitting season.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 465. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter, at John Stolness. And coming up, we're going to talk about the Phillies versus Braves series that just wrapped up down in Atlanta. And we will, of course, talk about the controversial play at home plate in the ninth inning of the game on Sunday Night Baseball. We'll talk about how our reaction to it and Major League Baseball's reaction to it as they are all breathing into a paper bag trying to recover from what happened last night. And we'll talk about where these two teams are, the Phillies and the Braves, after these first six games of the season against each other and how close these rosters are and just some other Phil's news and notes from the last couple of days. Lots to get to, and joining me to do it is Justin Clue and Liz Rocher, my good friends from Hittin' Season. You can follow Justin on Twitter at Justin_Clue. Listen to all the other podcasts he does for The Good Fight as well as for our Good Fight Hittin' Season Patreon. I keep wanting to call it the Good Fight Patreon, but it's not. It's a Hittin' Season Patreon. Go to patreon.com/hittin'season. Justin, how are you, bud?
Feeling great. By my count, Braves fans in the last 10 years have thrown garbage on the field in such volume that the game had to be stopped twice as many times as a Phillies fan threw a battery at someone. So, if anything, there's a new reputation in the NL East, and it's that Braves fans love nothing more than touching and throwing garbage.
I think in for future reference now, whenever there is an incident of something being thrown on a field during a, you know, and the Braves happen to be playing, I feel 100% confident the announcers are going to say, well, you know, Braves fans should be familiar with this scene, you know, rather than the nonsense from Matt Vasgersian on Sunday Night Baseball on ESPN, somehow taking a shot at Philly fans when Braves fans, for the second time in a decade, were the ones throwing trash on the field.
I enjoy absorbing hits like that, sitting quietly, you know, on my couch. Like, you're just sitting there. There's this feeling of, like, what the hell did I do? Like, what did we do? We're not there. That's not us. Like, we don't do that. But they've been doing it for 10 years. Dansby Swanson saying, oh, well, this isn't us. This isn't who we are. I got news for you, buddy. It's exactly who you are.
Yeah, I did like Dansby at least coming out and ripping the fans for doing it.
Me too.
I was not expecting that. So good on you, Dansby Swanson. But
really rubbing garbage in the wound there. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, a little bit of some coffee grinds and some whatever. Yeah, hot dog wrappers. Yeah,
get in there.
Yeah, Liz Rocher from Yahoo Sports is also here. Follow her on Twitter at Liz Rocher. Liz, how are you doing after what went down Sunday night in Hotlanta?
Do you think if this happened in Philadelphia to the Phillies, not benefiting the Phillies, but to the Phillies, I have a feeling fans there would be angry. There might be things thrown on the field.
You think so?
I don't know.
No, I disagree. I disagree.
As I said that, I was thinking we are a fan. We are not the fan base we once were, in that we have been beaten down by a decade of crappy Phillies teams.
Right.
We are not really, we expect to be screwed over.
I don't think we would, but I don't know why I don't think that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, the only explanation I have is that it's because we've been trained over the last, you know, 8-9 years to not expect anything good to happen. Mm-hmm. And so this, you know, a blown call like that would be par for the course.
Yeah, but that's what I was going to say. We've been jobbed so many times in our lives that it doesn't warrant trash throwing at this point. You know, it warrants the lusty boos that, you know, get shouted out from atop the rafters. But we don't throw crap. I mean, when it was Veterans Stadium, there was just so much trash around that most of the time when it was being thrown on the field, it was just to tidy up. But
living,
you know,
in trash, really, it was impossible to avoid.
Sorry, I was making a burrow like a dog in this pile of refuse next to my seat, and some of it got on the field.
This is how you stay warm during Eagles games.
I mean, is there a on record, even just the past 10 years, in which the Braves have at least two high profile incidents last night and in 2012 where they have thrown garbage on the field and stopped the game? In the last 10 years, is there a time when we threw garbage on the field at Citizens Bank Park? I really don't.
No.
I mean, granted, this has not been a competitive team for so long, but even during the the years where they were good and competing and you know, lost big games that ended their season. I don't remember that being the reaction by Phillies fans a single time. And I'm not saying that makes the Saints. I'm just saying this particular act, I don't think you can chalk this one up under our name.
I think it's happened once at a Flyers game in the last decade, but it hasn't happened at an Eagles game. It hasn't happened at a Sixers game. I mean, they weren't just saying Phillies fans. I mean, this is all of Philadelphia fans who apparently we are chronic trash throwers, despite no evidence pointing to said trash throwing. I mean,
And you know what? I'll take this a step further and say I think we're the only fan base whose fans from other sports get all lumped together as one giant amorphous group of criminals. Whereas if something happened at like an Atlanta Hawks game, no one would bring it up that Braves fans were like emulating that behavior or had that behavior in their history. No one would do that.
You know what I think it is? I think it's because the Phillies and the Eagles shared Veterans Stadium for so many years it just became like a house of a den of robbers. You know what I mean? Like, and so I think Phillies fans and Eagles fans kind of got, because really Phillies fans and Eagles fans who went to the Vet, a lot of them were the same folks. I mean, it sat 65,000 people. So there's just Phillies season ticket holders and Eagles season ticket holders were a lot of the same crew. And I think since Lincoln Financial Field came around and Citizens Bank Park came around, even Philadelphia sports fans recognized, you know, these are really nice places. We really like these places. And I think Philly fans don't trash those, our own places, you know? So it's just, and I think over the years too, Philly fans really, I think, have taken to heart a lot of the animus that's been thrown at them from the national media. And I think most of the time Philly fans just reserve their, you know, especially since these new stadiums were built, have reserved their bad behavior to some fights in the stands, which we see in other places, and booing.
I would like for all of us, all Philly fans, to understand that no matter what we do, it is never going to change that.
It's never going to change. You're right.
It's not. It's an easy reference that writers use because it's an easy reference. And you know what? No matter what we do in the future, we should be proud of it because we've become shorthand for everyone. We will always be mentioned in a certain context, whether or not it's deserved. We will go down in history as you know, fans that boo and throw things. And so I think we should embrace that and stop trying to be better.
When the history books are written, that's what it'll say about us.
Let's just revert back to our old ways of being trash throwing monsters.
I think it's not even irritating when like comments like Vesgersian made last night are said. Like, it's not even, I don't know. Maybe it stopped being irritating and just became cringeworthy, and then it became so cringeworthy it was irritating again. I don't know. I don't know how to best describe that. But at this point, it's just so tired. It's lazy. It's like, really, Matt? Like, that's the best you got? You're a professional broadcaster. You don't want to break into new ideas or comparisons.
It shines a light on who the bad broadcasters are. That's one thing it does. It points us to which are the lazy guys, which are the guys that don't understand nuance, which are the guys that don't know the history, and which are the guys that do. And the ones that fall back on that old battery throwing, booing Santa Claus stuff, it's a real easy shorthand for us to be able to point to and say, okay, yeah, this is not a good broadcast. This guy doesn't know what he's talking about.
Vesgersian sucks, so.
Yeah, and I think that's universally accepted that Vesgersian and A-Rod are both universally awful. Well, let's talk about the game a little bit, and obviously the controversy at home plate. The Phillies ended up losing 2 out of 3 from the Braves, but winning the final game to avoid the sweep on Sunday Night Baseball on a horrible call that went their way. And I keep thinking, there will be games. Well, there were lots of games last year that didn't go their way that were exactly like this. As that game was, before we get to the play at the plate, as that game was progressing, you know, the Braves took the early lead and then the Phillies battled back and then Acuna and Freeman just wouldn't let the Braves go down quietly. And we'll talk about Acuna in a minute because my goodness. But it just felt like that game felt like a loss, didn't it? I mean, as you were going through the seventh inning and the eighth inning, and that game felt like a loss. There was no way they were coming out of Atlanta with that victory last night, was there?
I mean, this was an objectively, I'm going to say an objectively good game, despite the way it ended.
It was.
I mean, I think even that, the way this game ended is a part of baseball. You know, arguing about a call, a missed call, the human element.
Absolutely.
Umpires being doofuses. the revelation that it's just another umpire on that phone. Not like, did you think? I think someone was saying like, oh yeah, that's a rotated position. Like the rest of the umpires, that could be Joe West on the phone, and you wouldn't know it. I thought it was like a technician or somebody just squinting at the screen. No, it's just another umpire, and he's like, oh well, I don't want my friends to look wrong, so I'll just tell them it's upheld. And I know we're gonna get to this, and we'll have further thoughts on this, so I'm not gonna go down that road just yet. But this is what I mean. It was an objectively good game. It's the kind of game the Phillies would lose in the last year or two. I would have chalked it up to feels like a loss in the first inning, where after two pitches, the Braves had a 2-0 lead. The Braves were all jacked up. The fans were screaming. You know, that's not a super winnable environment, but this team managed to, you know, find enough offense to keep fighting back and keep fighting back. So I think this was a really, really good game, and honestly is indicative of this, you know, this nine game scrum we've seen between NL East teams to start the season, and we get four more against the Mets here. It's been really indicative, I think, of what this division could look like in the months ahead. It could be a really fun and interesting NL East summer. And I think like these series are great. If the Phillies had been swept out by Atlanta and, you know, the balance had been restored, I don't know. I don't know if I'd be saying that same thing, because the series wouldn't have been as interesting to me. But the Phillies showed that they could come back. The offense wasn't dead. You know, they didn't come back in a big way each time, but they managed to do enough to keep the game interesting. And that's what made it eminently watchable. I mean, I feel like Sunday Night Baseball has had so many more misses than hits in the past few years. They've put two teams up there thinking this could be good, and then it was just, you know, game's over by the third inning. This was a Sunday Night Baseball game. This is what they're hoping when they put a game like this in primetime, and they got it. So I thought it was a great game. Would I be saying that if the call didn't go the Phillies' way? I would, but I wouldn't be as like excited in my tone, I think.
Yeah, Liz, I mean, I think, you know, as that game was moving along, it felt like there was no chance the Eagles were going to win. I did it again. There was no chance the Phillies were going to win. That time I caught myself.
There was no chance the Eagles were going to win.
There was no chance the Eagles were going to win that game. No. But here's the other thing I thought of, too. You know, it's like this was the perfect opportunity for one of those, you know, one of those games where you just, your heart has a hard time letting go of it. You know what I mean? And I think Justin hit the nail on the head. Like, if they end up losing that game after overcoming that early deficit and getting those home runs, the Bryce Harper home run to put them back on top, and then watch as this bullpen, which has been remade and has performed so well, it would have been the absolute. And I know Sam Coonrod gave up the one run lead, but I mean, to Ronald Acuña, who is on some other planet right now.
Can almost not fault a pitcher facing Ronald Acuña anymore.
I don't. And because they've been so good, it was the first time all year that the bullpen had given up a lead, that it would have felt natural for the Phillies to lose that game. And I wonder what it says to you about, maybe it's just one game out of 162, but this was a game that it really felt like they would have lost last year for sure.
Yeah, I think so. I was actually largely encouraged by the game. Even if they had lost, I would have been. Because despite what we've seen, the Braves are a good team. They beat the crap out of the Phillies, you know, a couple of times over the weekend. And seeing that, I mean, they went toe-to-toe with likely one of the best teams in the National League and were able to stay with them. If they hadn't scored that run, they would have gone into extras. If there hadn't been that blown call, excuse me, I think the game would have gone into extras. So I'm really encouraged by what I saw overall, because they climbed out of a hole. You know, the bullpen gave up a little, but to like the best player in baseball, and they ended up coming out on top. You know, finally a call goes the Phillies' way.
that's where I feel good about this. Yeah. In that, like last week, I said this team's got to pick up every win it can as quickly as it can before, you know, Freddie Freeman figures out who he is. And that was, I'm paraphrasing Demetrius Bell at Talking Chop, who said last night that once Freddie Freeman was handed his MVP award, he remembered who he was, and it's too late. Freddie Freeman's back. So we're not going to hold Freddie Freeman hitless for an entire series again, like we did on the opening series. That's over. So that's what I mean by you got to grab every win you can while guys like that are slumping or working their heads around something. Like, you got to win every W this team can get. It's going to need to survive September, to survive into the playoffs, because this is going to be a really competitive division, and this team has a reputation for coming up short in the second half. So get every win you can. I don't care how. This was a win. That's great.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about the bone play at home plate next. I will just add one other thing, that even after the Phillies took the lead, the Braves had Ozzie Albies and Ronald Acuna coming up in the bottom of the ninth mm-hmm. inning, and Hector Neris routinely really struggles in Atlanta. I can't count the number of games he has imploded against the Braves in Atlanta. They seem to have his number. I was sure he was giving up a run in the bottom of the ninth inning. So when he actually set them down 1-2-3, and a couple balls were hit hard, I was greatly surprised that the Phillies were able to take this final game on Sunday night, and they did so because of the play. So let's talk about the play. In the top of the ninth, score tied 6-6. Most of you listening already know what happened, but Bohm, of course, leads off the inning with a double. Great job by him to get into scoring position with nobody out. Phenomenal job to lead off the ninth. Was moved to third on a grounder by Gene Segura. As I was watching the game, I thought, man, back 20 years ago, this is a spot where they bunt the runner over to third, and I knew they weren't going to do that, but in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, Segura, just hit the ball to the right side. Get a grounder to the right side. You just need the one run here. I mean, yeah, beginning if you can get it, but most important thing is getting that guy over to third with less than two outs, and Gene Segura did that. So great at bat by Gene Segura. And then Didi Gregorius hits the fly ball to shallow left field to Marcell Ozuna, who can't throw. Bohm is called safe, although the replay shows he never touched home plate. Obviously, the reactions out there were numerous after the game. Alec Bohm was asked about it. Were you safe? He's like, I was called safe. That's all that matters.
Joe,
he is correct.
He's 100% right. Joe Girardi said the tip of his big toe got the plate, I think. Of course, that's not true, and he knows that's not true.
Doesn't matter.
Exactly. It doesn't matter. And, Drew Smiley after the game was upset. We have five different angles on a nationally televised game, and it's clear that his foot didn't touch the plate.
Is it?
True.
Here's the thing.
Go. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Now I will intro this. Let's do it.
Go.
Saying, I think that the reason they didn't overturn it is because it was not clear. Unless you've got a camera right down there that's able to see through all the dust, there is a chance that at some point he could have touched the plate, even if it wasn't apparent to the eye. And unless you could see daylight underneath his foot the entire time, which I don't think you could, then it's questionable. And there just wasn't enough evidence to overturn it. It may seem clear to everyone else, but maybe it's because I'm a Phillies fan and I enjoyed this. I feel like it's a totally defensible call. And have these baseball fans never experienced football? Ever?
Right.
This, they're just like, this, everything has to change. This is a shame. This is a disgrace to baseball.
Why do we have instant replay?
Oh, wah. Come on.
Change the game to fix this atrocity.
Oh, my God. Come on over to football, where a weekend can't go by without, the referees doing exactly that. There isn't enough evidence to overturn, pass interference or whatever it is, no matter how clear it looks. It happens at least once a week, if not more. Every team experiences this at least once over the season, and it's just 16 games. Baseball should be, every fan should be grateful that over 162 games, most teams
they get so much right.
Exactly. I mean, I'm tired of the whining. Instant replay is here to stay, and the way they're doing it is the way they're doing it. They're doing it by little minute things. If it looks like his foot left the bag for a split second play at second base, he's out. And that's the way they're doing it. And the umpires are responsible to no one and nothing except themselves. They police themselves. Occasionally Major League Baseball steps in. This is how they're doing it. And complaining about it is not going to do any good. So we should all just get on board. Get on board with it, because it's not changing. It's just not.
Well, I got to say, though, that seems like the epitome of the kind of response that comes from the winning side as opposed to the losing side in a situation
this.
You and I have spent entire episodes talking about how bad umpires are and how stupid it is that they're considered these infallible figures. And Jason Stark tweeted that one of the big questions within the game about this MLB replay system has always been how willing umpires in the replay room are to overrule a call by one of their fellow umps. Hard for the replay crew to look at Lance Barrett standing right on top of this play and say, wrong. And, that's the same issue, just on this level that's supposed to prevent this issue. Like, we're supposed to, it's supposed to fix the human element, but it's still the human element. It's just an additional level of it. And that is worth complaining about, I think, because that sucks. That's just more umpire infallibility. There's just one of them's, you know, a couple hundred miles away.
No, that's 100% true. And you have human emotion getting in the way of what is supposed to be a mechanical solution to the human element. You know what I mean? And that's what people have always complained about, you know. And I don't know that Major League Baseball's replay system, the only way to fix it, I think, is to take the umpires out of it and have executives, whoever they are, who know the rule book as well as umpires, but aren't part of the umpires union, don't have personal relationships. I mean, maybe you should make sure that these people are sequestered from umpires forever. You know, they can never have any, just so that there's, you know, there can't be any kind of, you know, well, he was right on the plate. You know, and Liz, I agree with you. I don't know for a fact that you saw anything that could overturn the call, and that has to be that has to be the basis for doing it. You know what I mean? Like that has to be, there has to be something that overturns the call. Like the call on the field has to stand unless there's something to overturn it. And so when you've got the guy standing right there over home plate and he calls it safe, I guess, you know, it's, I, you know, if I were the Braves, I'd be ticked off. Oh, yeah. Because you don't see his foot slide across home plate. You never see that. But you also don't ever see, you also cannot see home plate enough to the point where you can tell if his foot crossed it or not. So I agree with Justin. I think this is the argument the winning side makes. If we were on the other side, we'd be screaming our heads off, and rightfully so. The larger issue here then is, I mean, obviously the Phillies won this game. There will be a game later this year where they get hosed on a call and lose, mm-hmm, because of it. Mm-hmm. These things tend to even out. I said this when the Mets beat the Marlins, I think it was on Friday, when Conforto stuck his elbow out over the strike zone, and the Mets won a game after instant replay failed to overturn that, or instant replay wasn't able to overturn that play. There are holes within this instant replay system, just like there are in football. And can it be fixed? That's the question. Liz, can you fix Major League Baseball's replay system to weed this stuff out?
No. You're never going to be able to fix any replay system, because it all has to be run by humans. No matter what Major League Baseball tells us about robot umpires and whatever, we are far, far away from that technology being usable in a major league game in a way that's not going to be constantly questioned. And that's the thing. We replace this with technology, it doesn't mean it's infallible, because a human has to program it. Mm-hmm. A human has to program it to recognize certain things. There's always a human element in this. So there's always going to be a question. I mean, there are ways to fix replay as it stands, but that involves fixing the umpires. And there has been there's so many issues with that, because they are the area of the game that Major League Baseball almost never questions and is never seen, mm-hmm, publicly criticizing. They are incredibly secretive. Their collective bargaining agreement is not available anywhere. The only reason I've seen a part of it is because some of it was released in Angel Hernandez's now dismissed lawsuit against Major League Baseball. You know, that's part of the problem, is that umpires are completely inaccessible to players and everything. Like, that's the problem with this. Like, the human element is always going to be an issue, and that's what people need to accept. People need to accept that this is going to happen no matter who is in charge, whether it's a computer or a human. Because unless we come up with artificial intelligence that forms itself out of nothing, there's always a human's hand somewhere in this.
Yeah.
So this has happened to every team at one point or another. It just feels more egregious because it was the winning run in a game, and everyone feels like it was very clear.
Perhaps why, if you're going ahead to try and fix this system, you don't go, okay, what technology can we use to fix this? You more approach the human component of it, that there's an umpire culture that's headed by guys like Joe West, Angel Hernandez, CB Buckner, Laz Diaz, these guys who are famously bad at their profession, proud of it, think it's like all, you know, they think they can just smirk. And it's like, aha. And then, like, culturally, they're treated as like, oh, well, what are you going to do? I think maybe if you approach umpiring from that aspect, that, like, if we can just weed out some of these guys who suck and are proud of it, guys who are interested in the celebrity of being an umpire, which is something that should not exist, guys who are more interested in that, in evoking their authority rather than umpiring a baseball game, if you can get rid of those guys, weed those guys out, create a culture where it's like, no, you're an umpire, you're an official, you're part of the field per the rule book. Like, you shouldn't be known, and you need to be held, and create a system where they can actually be held accountable. You know, too many calls go against them based on the replay system. You can bust it back down to the minors, man. You're not good enough to be a major league umpire. I think if you approach it from the human angle and just create, attempt to create, and I know this is, you know, always a challenge, but attempt to create a better culture among the humans who are running the better technology, then perhaps you're going to have a better system in place. This would, of course, take a long time. And you're going to, you know, union is involved. Joe West isn't going anywhere until he decides he's going somewhere. Obviously, but I'm just saying, I think if you were to genuinely approach this with the intent of fixing it, I think it's probably a better idea to start there as opposed to the technology, because Liz is right. It's always going to be a human who's using it.
I don't know how you guys feel about replaying baseball, but I hate it in general. I want it to go away.
I mean, at this point, if last night is any indication and Stark's tweet is any indication, then it's not changing anything anyway.
Right, it's not. And that's the thing. I mean, and the things that it does change, it takes away, like Liz mentioned this just a few minutes ago, and this is one of the aspects of instant replay that I detest. And it's when a runner is sliding into second base and his foot comes off the bag for a nanosecond. And you can stop these replays and go frame by frame by frame to find out if a guy's cleat left the bag for 200ths of a second and whether or not the fielder's glove. Yes, he wasn't on the bag for that 200ths of a second when the fielder was tagging him with the baseball. I'm sorry, he's safe. That's not an out, he's safe. And I've seen that so many times. I'm just done with instant replay in Major League Baseball. I don't think it changes all that much most of the time. I know that there are famous plays throughout Major League Baseball's history where if you'd had replay, the whole course of a season or the whole course of a major event might have changed. I mean, the Armando Galarraga perfect game that wasn't because Matt Joyce missed the call at first base, that would have been fixed, and Armando Galarraga would have had a perfect game. And certainly you could argue that instant replay, we wish that it had been in place for that particular play. The 1985 World Series in Game 6, there was the famous game in which the Royals scored two runs in the bottom of the ninth inning because of Don Thanginger's missed call at first base on a play where the runner was clearly out and he was called safe. That's a play where you wish you had instant replay to go back and change something. But those are also huge moments in baseball history that we look back on. It's unfortunate for the fan base that gets hosed in that particular situation, but there are also these huge moments in baseball history that we never forget. One of baseball's greatest charms is it's the blown calls, right? You know, these moments in baseball history, the blown calls. Well, guess what? We have another one of those. It happened last night in Atlanta with instant replay. So I just don't, I think it's more negative in that it slows the game down more than it needs to. I also think that the way it's implemented doesn't work. I think managers should not be able to have people in the clubhouse be watching the instant replay to tell him whether or not to challenge a play. Mm-hmm. I think it should be based on the players on the field or the manager's gut instinct and reaction. No, I don't think he was out on that play. I'm challenging that call. You shouldn't be able to have somebody in the clubhouse looking and telling the manager, yeah, he was safe. You need to challenge that play. I know that that's how it's done in the NFL. I don't think it works in Major League Baseball. There's so many problems with instant replay that go beyond what happened last night. I'm in favor of just junking it and going back to the way it used to be.
I think the problem is that fans, and maybe even Major League Baseball itself, believes that there is a permanent and perfect solution. I think that's a huge problem. I think the introduction of technology into the game of baseball in general has led people to think that there is a perfect solution for this, and there's not. Mm-hmm. Every sport has the human element, and I think baseball is the one that has a lot of it. And a lot of people claim that that's part of its charm, that it's everyone who's on the field are the ones who make the decisions. You know, in the field and the dugout, mm-hmm. those are the only people who are affecting the game, no matter how it turns out. you know, this removes some of that from it. But people, I think, had the impression that it was going to make everything better. And it hasn't, no matter what. There is a human element involved. And if you believe that's part of the charm of the game, then, again, accept it.
Yep.
It's a lot more it's a lot more charming when you're reading about it like years later than when it's happening in the moment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But that's a defense that a lot of people use. Like, there's going to be blown calls either way. And you'd be, I think that we'll never know, but in a parallel universe where this is happening only without replay, people are just as angry. They're just as angry.
Do you think it can't get any better? And this is a two-part question. Do you think it can't get any better that we shouldn't even bother to try to improve it? Or do you think that the feeling that umpiring has seemingly gotten worse is more about the introduction of technology, and that there's more ways for even just a fan to monitor an umpire's accuracy? And you get all these like Twitter accounts that are putting umpire report cards out. And like now fans can monitor umps even more closely than it sometimes feels like the league is. Like, do you feel like we're just more hyper aware of when umps are wrong, or that they are more wrong in general now?
I think we're more hyper aware because you didn't used to have the track box, you know, like the strike zone box in every game where you could see exactly where the little ball landed outside the strike zone, you know, and you have that on the MLB app. You have that on game day. You have that on most TV broadcasts. They have that little square in the strike zone. So you get to see exactly where that pitch missed. You get to see exactly whether or not the umpire missed it by a couple of inches, or whether, you know, there have always been games and there have always been umpires who were bad, who you could just tell, man, he's calling pitches that are 6 inches off the strike zone strikes all game long, and his strike zone is inconsistent. Does he have a high strike? Does he have a low strike? That's always been there. But I don't think the state of umpiring is necessarily worse than it ever has been. I think there are more ways for us as the general public to see it in real time, and that colors our understanding of how good or how bad umpires are. I don't think umpires have all of a sudden gotten a whole lot worse, and maybe it is a little harder for umpires nowadays because the stuff pitchers are throwing is way nastier than it used to be. So it can be, I think, maybe especially for home plate umpires, the game's a little bit faster. There's pitches that are moving at a higher velocity with sharper break and all that kind of stuff. So that may be, if it is worse, that could be a reason for it. But I think it's mostly just that we get to see now where these pitches are in real time. And whereas before, when you didn't have a little box and you didn't have the internet to keep an eye on it, you know, you just assumed, well, maybe the camera angle's a little weird, or it's just off the plate a little bit. But, you know, did it get the plate? Did it not get the plate? You can't really tell.
My impression, and this is without knowing anything about how umpires train, how often they train, how they are graded and, you know, reviewed. My impression is that the game has moved faster with technology than the umpires. That there's a lot more technology within baseball and within baseball broadcasting now that everyone's availing themselves of. And it seems to me that the umpires union isn't employing anything to help umpires be better. I mean, maybe they are and we just don't know, but it seems like they're not, because it's obviously, it doesn't seem like it's working. If umpiring has gotten worse, or if baseball has advanced, you would assume that it would make sense for the umpires union to start figuring out, all right, well, there's all this technology available. How do we use it to make umpires better? They are constantly beleaguered. They're always going to be beleaguered, but we'd like them to be right more often and, you know, have it be apparent to people that they are correct. How do we help our umpires be better? And no one seems interested in that. And I tweeted this at a friend of mine recently who was complaining about, I think it was Laz Diaz, and it's the same complaint. It's Laz Diaz knows why everybody came to the baseball game, to see him. And my response was, I've noticed over the past year that there are a lot of new young umpires. I don't know any of their names, and I don't recognize them from game to game. And that's excellent. Yeah. That's wonderful. And that eventually those guys will become the guys we hate. Of course they will. Eventually they will become the Joe Wests and the CB Buckners. Mm-hmm. But for now, we can look at them and think that is the future when Joe West finally retires. Excuse me, when he finally retires, which I'm guessing will be at the end of this, at the end of this year.
Yeah, after he sets the record for most games on fire. We are overdue for a break. We'll step away. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll just take a look at these two teams, the Phillies and Braves, and you know how close are they? Because these first two series have been pretty tight, even though the Phillies have taken four out of the first six. So we'll talk about that coming up next here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So as we take a look at the Phillies and we take a look at the Braves, they've played two series, one in Philadelphia and then, of course, one in Atlanta. The Phillies swept the opening season series. They were not overwhelming victories for the most part, other than Zach Wheeler's second game of the season when he dominated a Braves lineup was pretty potent, but obviously was having some trouble getting off the ground. But I also think, you know, in this series in Atlanta kind of dominated most of the series until last night when the Phillies fought back, and they've had some trouble with their starting rotation here the second time through. But otherwise, it's been a pretty tight series between both of these two teams, and that's kind of how I saw things with these two franchises. I thought the rosters were pretty close, and much closer than people thought, simply because of how bad the bullpen was. If you think the bullpen's a whole lot better, I think these two rosters are actually pretty close. And when you look at the run differential right now, so far in these six games, Atlanta has outscored the Phillies, but 22-21. It's a difference of one run in these six games as far as run differential is concerned, even though the Phillies have won four out of the first six. So you could argue these teams are almost identical. They're right with each other. And I kind of want to get your thoughts on, if you guys think there is a difference between these two teams, how large is the gap? So, Justin, if the Phillies are slightly better than the Braves right now, and you could make that argument having won four of six, how much better? If you think the Braves are better based on recent track record from the last 3 years and the run differential, how much better are the Braves than the Phillies? Where are these two? What is the difference between these two teams right now?
I think the difference is that the Phillies' success in the opening series was largely due to their starting pitching and then their bullpen. I think that this game, the last night, they had to rely on their offense to keep them in it, and they did. The other two games that they lost to the Braves, they were indicative of how I think the Braves are going to win. Like, they won a close game over the Phillies on Saturday, and they pummeled the Phillies on Friday. So I think the Phillies are capable of winning games in those same fashions. We haven't really seen as much offense from them. The main difference I see here is that I think a lot of the Phillies' success, player to player, is based on an almost like handing off of the baton style of success. Whereas you get three great starts from the Phillies' top three starters, and then three not really great starts their second time through the rotation, and they have to hand off the baton to someone else to like win the game or try and win the game. In the case of two of those games, they did not. And I think if you make it an easier comparison, I guess, is just offensively. I think that Rhys Hoskins has looked great. I think Rhys Hoskins has keyed the offense here in the beginning of the season. He has looked awesome. I hope it continues. History has taught us it will not. Yeah. And hopefully when he is, shutting down for however long he shuts down for, maybe that's when Bryce Harper picks back up. Maybe that's when Realmuto goes on a tear. Maybe that's when, McCutcheon gets really hot. A couple of these guys, Boehm has had a really good start to the season. Maybe he shuts down and one of the other guys picks it up. With the Braves.
And Harper and Realmuto both have OPSs over 900 right now. So that part of the lineup is doing its job. You're right.
My point being that in the case of the Braves, I think you're going to have success come from Ronald Acuña all season long. I think you're going to have success come from Freddie Freeman all season long. I don't think you have to worry about them handing off a baton and worrying that these guys aren't great, but these guys are, and that's how we're finding success. I think with the Braves, you have more examples of guys who can be successful all season long, as opposed to 2 months, and then it's this guy's turn. And that, I think, is where I see the difference between the two teams.
That's interesting, Liz. I mean, I think I agree. I can't argue with that because we've seen Acuña and Freeman be more consistent all season long. But if the Phillies can get what Justin has said, and that different parts of the lineup, four or five guys are contributing at a time, is that enough to offset that as far as lineups are concerned? And then, looking at the pitching staffs.
I think it is, because that's, you look at teams in general, and it's rare that everything is rolling at the same time, right? It's rare that every pitcher's doing well, every member of the bullpen is doing great, every hitter is on. So that's, I think that's the most you can ask from a team, from a good team, at least. And I think they can do that. I think if they do that, they do have a chance. They've looked competitive in all of their games. I mean, I think with the exception of...
Yes, they
have. With the exception of maybe one.
The Vince Velasquez game. It's the only one.
They've looked competitive. I mean, and this is... Their attitude on the field has been exactly what you want to see. Not like anybody would expect to see anything different, but there's a lot of not giving up. There's a lot of, you know, being serious every at bat. There's always a chance. It feels like, to me, it's like they feel like they could win every game. At any point, they could come back and win every game, even ones where they're behind. And that's new. At least, you know, since the, you know, since like midway through last season, that's a new feeling. And it's something new to see on the field. And it's really great. They're all really into it. They feel how we feel, that they have a chance to win it. And they're not like the top pick and they've been undervalued, but they believe that they can do it. And I think that attitude is going to take them a really long way.
Yeah, and it's really early to make any firm predictions or any firm decisions on what the Phillies have in some of these cases, because, you know, after that first series, you know, we looked at that starting rotation. They had a 1.31 ERA in that season opening sweep against the Braves. Todd Zielecki tweeted this stat out last night. And then they'd struck out 24 and only walked one batter in 20 and two-thirds innings against the Braves. And then since then, they have a 5.46 ERA, the starters do. They've struck out 23 in those six games and walked 13 in 28 innings. So, you know, how Aaron Nola, Zach Wheeler, Zach Eflin, they've had one good start and one bad start. Matt Moore has had two substandard starts, although he settled down a little bit on Sunday night after a rough first inning. But I saw something that Ethan Whitty from The Good Fight tweeted out. Looking at some of his pitch release, it looks like maybe the Braves had keyed in on some kind of pitch tipping where he's releasing his changeup from a higher arm slot than some of his other pitches. And, you know, I'm sure that if that's happening, that's something Caleb Cottom, you would hope, can fix and make him a little bit more effective. And we'll get a look at Chase Anderson in his second start on Monday against the Mets. So still not sure exactly how good the rotation is. They were great through their first time and substandard the second time. I think the bullpen we should feel pretty good about. They, again, just through the first, what is it, nine games that they've played, they've looked really solid. They've picked up the starters when they haven't done well. They've allowed the offense, when Vince Velasquez is not prominently involved, to stay within striking distance and get back in games. And I think the offense is pretty close to Atlanta's offense. You're right, Justin, not necessarily maybe as consistent all year long with their star players, but I think if Gene Segura turns things around, 1 through 7, they've got just as good a lineup as anybody in the National League, and you hope that you can start to get something out of center field at some point this year. So, I mean, I think these two rosters are really close, and I think these six games and the run differential basically tells that story. The question, I think, is going to be health in a lot of different cases. You know, we've seen different guys on the Phillies miss time over these last few years. Bryce Harper, his slump occurred because his back gave out on him last year. You know, we saw JT Realmuto at the beginning of the spring get hurt, and thankfully he came back pretty quickly. But Andrew McCutchen leaves for a long period of time.
Archie,
you know,
Bradley's out right now.
That's right, and they're going to have to figure out a way to kind of to fill the void there with Connor Brogdon and Sam Coonrod and figure out how those different slots are going to work out. So... But I do think these two teams are pretty close, and I don't think the difference between the two of them... That's why I picked the Phillies to win the division, because I did think these rosters were really close together, and we're going to have to see how this rotation goes moving forward, whether or not they're going to be more like they were the first time through or more like they were the second time through. I kind of lean, as far as at least Nola and Wheeler are concerned, the former as opposed to the latter.
Also, for the record there, I tweeted out those same stats 5 days ago about the first three starts, and I compared it to the first three starts of 2011. The ones from 2021 were slightly better than the 2011 first three starts made by the, you know, iconic pitchers Halliday, Lee, and Oswalt. But looking back, that almost was like an indication of how well this certainly can't last, because these three pitchers are not those three pitchers. You know, that they're, I mean, not yet and maybe not ever, but
right.
You know, that they set a very high bar in those first three games. I don't know. Yeah. You could almost, if you wanted to be worried, which I don't, but if you wanted to be worried, you could probably chalk that up to the Braves offense not finding its first gear yet. Than as much as it is, like, those are three good pitchers, and hopefully we see more of that as the year goes on, and I think we will. But yeah, I think you might be able to factor in the fact that the Braves offense just wasn't there yet. Freddie Freeman didn't have a hit that whole series, which, to their credit, that's a huge deal.
By the way, before we move on to our last thing, we're you know, to preview the upcoming four game series against New York. Just one thing more about Ronald Acuña. Give me a number. Where does he rank as far as the best players in baseball? Is he top five?
I mean, I picked him to be the MVP. So
yeah, he's very good.
That's looking good.
Best player in the National League. Willing to say that?
I would have. I've always leaned Juan Soto, but I think you look at the total package, speed, the way he beat out that routine ground ball to shortstop, and I do think Didi clutched it a little bit, but I mean, it was a routine crow hop to throw over to first. I mean, the fact that he beat out that the first play of the game, where he beat that routine ground ball to shortstop, and the fact that Didi threw it hard, like, Didi didn't lollipop the throw over there. I think I saw, like, the throw from Didi Gregorius was, like, you know, 80 miles an hour. So I mean, it was not a lollipop throw. That he beat that out shows his speed. He likes to steal. He hits home runs whenever he wants to. He plays good defense out.
That was scary. When he ran that grounder out, that was scary, because I don't think I've ever seen that before. And it's the kind of thing that coaches, when we were kids, would tell us, like, oh, if you run hard enough, you never know what's going to happen, and you can beat out that grounder. You never know. You never beat out a grounder that somebody fields cleanly and throws cleanly. You just never do that.
You hit hard?
And he did it. He did it. Yeah, and like that, that was a scary play for that reason.
From the right side of the plate. Yeah. It's not like he's a lefty like Ichiro, where he gets out of the box in because he's falling away from the plate to begin with. It's crazy.
And that's why entering the bottom of the ninth inning, which, by the way, this whole narrative, you got to factor in that the Braves had another shot to tie the game.
Oh, yeah.
Which it seemed,
yeah,
you know, very likely. Everybody had been scoring all game. It was going back and forth. I assumed they were going to score. You put that Hector Neris-Ronald Acuña matchup in there, and you're like, gosh, I wonder who's going to win. But you know what? Since 2018, Ronald Acuña is 0-9 against Hector Neris with one walk.
Right?
He struck him out six times in nine at-bats. So that's actually a good matchup for the Phillies somehow.
Wow. Amazing. All right, well, real quick, let's look ahead to this four-game series coming up against the Mets. And it's going to be a struggle to get all four of these games played. I don't know if you guys – Matt Gelb tweeted out the weather forecast for these four games. There's a 99% chance of rain as we're recording this here on Monday with a high of 49. So that's not too great. There is a what is this? 81% chance of rain on Tuesday with a high of 61. A 45% chance of rain on Wednesday with a high of 64. And then – a 100% chance of rain on Thursday with a high of 52 degrees. Some Northeast baseball in April. Sounds like a lot of fun.
Flushing always smells so much better in the rain, you know?
Yeah, I can imagine. I can imagine the raindrops bringing all the scent from the ground. It's just lovely. And the Mets are coming off a game yesterday where they basically played one inning and had the game postponed because of rain. Marcus Stroman, who started the game, I think threw like seven pitches before the game was halted. He was not happy that the game was even played to begin with. And the Mets are the ones who make that call. The home team decides whether or not to start the game. So good job, New York. Mets are 2-3 to start the season. The pitching matchups this week, Chase Anderson versus David Peterson in the game on Monday. Aaron Nola versus Taijuan Walker in the game on Tuesday. Zach Wheeler versus TBD on Wednesday, and then Zach Eflin versus Jacob DeGrom if the game that has a 100% chance of rain gets played on Thursday. Although, I tweeted this out too earlier today. I'm not sure why people are upset about facing Jacob DeGrom anymore. He has a 2.06 ERA since 2018, which seems pretty bad, but the Mets are only 36-42 in his 78 starts. They just don't win when he starts. So you should want to face Jacob DeGrom, right?
I was just going
to
say that. It honestly makes me look forward to Jacob DeGrom's starts. Sure, you get eight innings of perfectly futile at-bats from the Phillies, but then that ninth inning, when they inadvisedly take him out of the game because he's thrown 115 pitches, and you can get into that Mets bullpen, I mean, it's not a guaranteed win, but the odds are definitely in your favor.
They're in your favor. No doubt about it. So that's the series coming up here against against New York, and we'll see how many of those games get played. I would imagine one or two of those games might get rained out, including the game here as we are recording on Monday. All right, let's wrap things up here on this episode of the podcast. Liz, any final thoughts from you?
No, I guess not really, other than I hope they get to play baseball this week despite the rain, and I'm excited. Again, still excited about Phillies baseball. I don't know if this is a personal record since 2011, but it's close, probably.
Yep, no, it's definitely that win on Sunday Night Baseball definitely puts a little wind in the sails that would not have been there had they gotten swept, for sure.
I woke
Justin,
up
final thoughts
it.
From you.
Yeah, this was the first game in a while. Usually it's a game like this that we're on the losing end of that I wake up thinking about, and I'm still mad about it. But we got to wake up feeling good about this. And John, you were saying a difference between the Phillies and Braves is it might come down to like injuries and help. I think the other big factor is luck. And the Phillies have not been a very lucky team for a while.
Yep.
It's not been their only problem, but it's definitely been present. And to see one go their way, which is something we've talked about in off seasons, you're like, okay, this team has got to pick up a few extra wins. Hopefully some of the bounces that have bounced away from them bounce toward them this time. This was a good bounce. Phillies got a good bounce last night. Also, in the Mets, Mets' most famous moment of this season so far, they got pretty lucky. One of Michael Conforto, non-call, failure to evade, and all that. So seeing these two teams that are like both of, hopefully the Phillies are about to embark on the rest of a season where luck is on their side for the first time in a while. If the Mets are experiencing the same thing, it'll be interesting to watch them play four games against each other. But mostly this 13-game scrum of NL East teams, it's really showing you what a whirring blender that the top of this rotation could be. And like I said, it could make for a really fun season of NL East baseball. So I'm encouraged by that. Would I be as much if the Phillies lost the game last night? Probably not. But right now,
probably not.
It's been a lot of fun and a lot of great baseball in a division that I think has been mostly known for being wet paper in the past. So this has been great, and I hope it continues.
Yep, a lot of fun so far here in the early going, and the Phillies now get a four-gamer going up against the New York Mets in New York, a place where the Phillies have played pretty well since Citi Field opened over the years. And so we'll see how many of these games they're able to get in between the raindrops this week. Folks, that's going to do it for this episode of Hittin' Season. My thanks to Justin and Liz for joining me on Hittin' Season once again. And don't forget, folks, to head on over to the Hittin' Season Patreon. We got lots of stuff going on over there. New tiers for you to check out. So go to patreon.com/hittin'season and see everything that we've got going on over there. And listen, the Phillies are red hot. You're not going to want to pay attention to the Philadelphia Eagles this summer. I mean, there's just nothing going on. So tell your friends about the Good Fight podcast feed. Philadelphia is about to be a baseball town again, folks. So get in now. Tell them about us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is you get your podcasts. And have them leave a 5-star rating and a review while they're there as well. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time here on Hittin' Season.